question was asked, is it proper, okay, permissible to have a television in one's home? And I want us to address the question from many different angles. And it's important to be honest, to hear the different angles. If you look online, you'll see that this question was asked before, and I addressed it before. A guy asked me, what's wrong with having a TV at home, and what's wrong with sitting down at the end of a hard day and watching a TV show? And at the time, what I answered him was that there are so many orphans in this neighborhood that don't have someone to read them a bedtime story. There are so many orphans in this neighborhood that don't have anyone to sit and do their homework with them. There are so many important things that are easy to do, and there's so much need going on around us. You know, you go down three stops on the bus or the train from here, there's a whole community of Ethiopian kids that don't have anyone to work with them and educate them. I'm not talking about something far out. I'm talking about right here in Giv'at, Kiryat Yovel. Sure. I'm saying there's tremendous amount of need. How could a person turn his back on what has to happen and say, I'm going to sit and waste an hour of my life? And I think there's truth to that answer. Meaning there's really important things to do in this world. There is a government that's considering giving away Jerusalem. There's a lot that has to happen. We have alumni who spend their time, their free time, on the web promoting good news about Israel. You know, we are in the middle of a media war going on here. The world is trying to ostracize us and boycott Israel. And there is a tremendous fight going on for public opinion. So if a person needs to sit down on the web and he's not sure what he wants to do this time, but he wants to relax a little bit, there'd be nothing wrong with going online and trying to even the odds a little bit, trying to protect our name on the web. For example, I'm saying. So I think there's truth to that, that a person should be focused on leading a productive life. You sit down and watch TV, you don't walk away rejuvenated. You go for a walk, you go for a jog, you sit down outside and breathe the fresh air and relax your mind, you'll walk away rejuvenated. So, that's not addressing the question at its core. But it is addressing a certain approach a person should have. When a person brings a television into the home, so they're reducing their productivity time vis-a-vis the world, vis-a-vis the family, and they're also bringing into the home pictures and attitudes and language that I think is going to be very detrimental to their own development and to their children's development. So that's an obvious reason to think 10 times about bringing a television into the home. Saying, how would a person feel if they found out that their child was watching immodest movies? There's no way you can protect your child from that once you have a television at home. Today's standard TV has very immodest things, and I'm using clean language when I say immodest. I'm not talking about a woman whose sleeve goes above her elbow. Okay? And I'm talking about people not fully clothed doing all kinds of things. So you're exposing your children to things that I think you would be pretty disappointed if you found out they were watching them, and yet they're going to watch them, and you have no way of controlling it. So there are plenty of reasons to think many times about that decision. What I want to present this time that we didn't discuss in the past, and I didn't realize how important it was until it sort of exploded in my face a few weeks ago, is that there are people who are not holding there. There are people who are not holding there. They're going to have a television at home. And it doesn't matter what I'm going to say. Their case is closed. They're going to have a TV at home. And I want to address those people for a minute, because what sometimes happens is that people hear an all or nothing type of deal. You shouldn't have it at home. And if you have it at home, okay, so you're a bum. So you guys are laughing. But here's the conversation I had. Of course, I always change a few facts. But A guy comes in and says to me, "Tell me, Rabbi, on Shabbos, what things do you get killed for and what things are just biblically prohibited?" So I said, "Why do you ask?" So he says, "Well, I know I'm a good for nothing because I watch movies every so often. So if I'm a good for nothing because I watch movies every so often, so I want to be a little bit lax on Shabbos too." So I felt very bad because I realized that he had heard so many speeches about how wrong it is to have a TV at home that he considered himself to be a half-observant Jew already because he does have a TV at home, and therefore, in his mind, I'm already half-observant, so I might as well, you know, so let me fudge the Shabbos a little bit too. So that's wrong. So I want us to get perspective. A person that watches TV can still be a kosher Jew. It's not right. It's not right to bring into the home. And it's very destructive on many, many levels. And if there's something you can do that would be a good investment in yourself and your home, I wouldn't bring a TV into the home. Every previous time that we discussed it, I came out very strongly against it, and I think it's very, very wrong. And at the same time, I'm not saying that because a person has a TV and watches a movie, so therefore, you know, the guy don't eat his food and he's half religious. We have to have balance in life. The problem with this is that sometimes if you show the other side and you say, okay, if a guy has a TV at home, that doesn't make him not kosher. You know, so then people say, oh, so I could be a kosher Jew with a TV. Okay, but it's still very wrong. That's why I was very concerned. I didn't know how to answer your question. Because the truth is that as an educational institution, what we really have to do is stress the side that you guys have to understand it's one of the most hurtful things you can do to yourself and your family and your children and your wife. You end up not only wasting time. I visited a friend. He was sick in bed. So I came to visit him. And he says to me, "Rabbi, you got to give me a minute. I need 5 minutes." And in the middle of my visit, so I had already traveled the distance to visit him. I wasn't about to walk out because he needed 5 minutes. He turns on the TV to a wrestling match. The amount of hatred I heard from the way they spoke, they interviewed these guys before they wrestle. I said to him, "How could you watch such hatred? These people are talking like criminals, like I'm ready to kill you," and such words. And you see, then he's going to watch how they go out on the ring and they beat one another up. I said, "What are you doing? I don't understand. That I was a kid. I watched wrestling. I know what wrestling looks like. When I was a kid, it wasn't like this. You didn't hear such hatred. You didn't hear such vile talk before they went into the wrestling match. I'm telling you, I was a kid. I have a dark history, you know. Okay, but today, I was shocked. Like, how could you do that? How could you? I'm not even talking about your kids. For yourself, Chazal warned us: you look at evil things, it affects a person. You want to be a kind person, look at kind things. One of the descriptions of the Ribbono Shel Olam is Mitzapeh L'tova. God is always looking for the good. He's looking for the good that's going to happen in the future. He's looking for the good in each of us. He's looking for positive. We have a role in life to look for positive in the world. Look for positive in human beings. Look to create positive. Look to see the good in things. You bring in a TV to the house, you bring in such a Yetzer Hara. And I'm telling you, till today I was shocked. I was visiting him and he turned on the TV. So I tried to look the other way. I'm not looking, right? I'm not looking, right? It has this pull. You're in the room and you try to look the other way and it keeps pulling you. They're yelling at you. They're talking at you. So you have to ask yourself, why would you do that? You know, it's like putting a little bit of poison into every drink your kid's drinking. Over time, it affects. So you're bringing in something that's going to be the spiritual poison of the house. So eventually, it eats away at a person. Again, this, after what I heard a month ago, I'm tempering my words. Because I have to recognize that there are going to be people who, unfortunately, will bring it into their homes. And it's important that you don't look at anyone who has a TV as though he's a bum and half religious. It's wrong, but okay, fine. I'm not here to judge people. But I want you to know, on the one hand, it's not what you should be doing. And on the other hand, if you do do it, that doesn't mean you're half a Jew. You're still a kosher Jew. And you still have to keep all 613 mitzvot. Now, you'll ask me, should I watch a TV show with my wife? So I'll tell you like this. We just discussed that the correct thing is not to have a TV at home. But if you're going to have a TV at home and you're going to watch that TV, so I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a hard call because that depends. If otherwise she'd be productive learning something, so why should I tell you to bring her down with you? If otherwise she's going to watch her video and you're going to watch yours, so then yeah, better you watch something together, right? At least you're in the mud together. I think that there's a mistake that people make. People think they're spending time with someone when they go to watch a movie together. It's not real. Are you with the person or are you watching the movie? You're not with the person. I mean, I grew up at an age when there were still, what did they call them? You drove in, drive-in theaters? Yeah, and it was interesting because when I was a kid, they still had those drive-in, they had a drive-in theater right near the supermarket. So when we'd go shopping, we'd see all these cars pull up. And my parents would always make sure to park at the other side of the parking lot. Because you know what happened at the drive-ins. All they'd show you was this guy surfing. No one was looking at the guy surfing. No one was looking at that. They were all focused on the person they were with, right? All kinds of things going on in those cars watching at the drive-in. Okay, so there I could hear. You know, it's not a nice thing. It's not a modest thing. But they're with one another. They're not with the video. But today, people go out for a movie. They're not sitting together. Maybe they're eating the same thing of popcorn, right? That's it. They're focused on the video. I guess it's better than not being there with someone. Saying, if you're going to go to one movie, she's going to go to the other. That's sad. You might as well go together. But it's... I think it's a... It's... Again, it's like the lesser of two evils. You know, when we first got married, so we'd have a chavrusa. Every night, at supper, we'd learn a little bit of the biography on Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So there you could talk. You're reading about a person, and you talk about the story. Friday night, we would do the dishes. Couple, we'd have guests. One would read from Pirkei Avos, the other would do the dishes. We'd take turn, my wife and I. One time I would read, she would do the dishes. One time she would read and I would do the dishes. And that's so then you're learning, you're talking with the other person. But I found that when we went to museums together, it didn't really work. When we were dating, we tried going to museums together. Because you're standing there trying to read. And then even now when we go with the kids, I guess there's room to talk. But I find that most of the time I'm at a museum, I'm trying to read. I'm trying to absorb the information, not talk about the information. If you're one of those people who likes talking about what you're seeing all the time, so then your wife might really enjoy going with you. Women like to talk about what they're seeing. Like I'm saying, most men are like reading, trying to grasp what's going on. No, you see it. You go to museums, you see. The women are talking about everything they're seeing, and the men are just trying to follow. I think that it's not like one of those things that you experience together. You go rowboating together. You go hiking together. It's together time. You sit to watch a movie together. I don't know. I think for most people, they're not really getting much out of it. If you disagree with me, tell me. Yeah.
I hear what you say about television, you know, being that it's uncontrollable. Kids will get access to it, even if there is something worth seeing. There's a lot that's, you know, the negatives far outweigh it. But for movies, I mean, I think that there clearly are, whether you call it a little downtime entertainment, whether with your wife or without your wife, whether you call it, you know, educational, certain PZ, whatever you want to call these things, to put that in the same category, not through a TV, I'm talking about, you know, wherever, a film set or whatever, document, whatever, to make that, like, it's a trade experience, off-limits, I think might be a bit harsh. I don't know.
I'll tell you, I don't think so. I agree with you. I think there are things that are within the limits, and I think people take it too far. I think a person should aspire to being productive and then a person shouldn't need that. I think there's nothing wrong. There are things which bemit, there's nothing wrong with them. Where, like you're saying, there are things that are in the realm of innocent. And I would even add that even as educators, even as parents, your kids are going to discover what movies are. And you have to expose them to it. Part of your job as an educator, as a parent, is to show them what a movie is. You can't make it taboo. What I'm telling you now, they might not like my saying it online, but one of the big Hasidic rabbis that are still around today, he's in his 80s or his 90s, he said it to me when I was discussing with him education 15, 20 years ago. He said to me, you got to show your kids what a TV is and you got to show them what movies are. You can't make it something that's forbidden in the closet that they never saw. You have to find ways to integrate it and to tell them, look, this is not good and this is good. When I go with my kids to a hotel lobby, or there are all these places where they sometimes put a public TV up and the kids can watch. So I check what's going on there. And so long as it's not too terrible, we go into the electronics store, right? I went to buy this MP3 player, right? So my son was with me, and they have TVs going. So I look to see what's playing, and then the kids ask me, can I go see? And I say, yeah, go enjoy. So it's not taboo. There are venues where they see it. I went to meet a relative. The place had a TV playing. The kids weren't with the relative at all, unfortunately. They were all watching the TV. But I didn't think it was right to stop them. It wasn't something too terrible. Then they entered all realm of murder. This one's running that, and that one's running this one. So I told the kids, look, it's a bunch of cruel things that to see. It's chaval to see that. But I explained it to them. Again, I think you're right. There is a realm there are videos that are within that realm which is not prohibited at all, and there's nothing wrong with it. And a TV is much less control, and when it comes to videos, there's a whole realm which is completely permissible. I think that parents underestimate the harm that those innocent things cause, because I know that once parents bring it into the home, what ends up happening is that you don't want to deal all afternoon with your kids. If you could put on Sesame Street for an hour, you're not going to deal with the kids. You're going to put them in front of that Sesame Street. And that hour becomes 2 hours. And then you end up having kids that figure they're coming home at 1 o'clock. So they're eating lunch till 2 o'clock. They're going to be in bed at 6 o'clock. So you have 4 hours of that chunk of time that you actually have normal time with your kids. At least half of that, the average parent stoops the kid in front of the Sesame Street. So even if you'll tell me Sesame Street is okay, you have to see where it's going to lead to. Don't just look at that innocent thing and say, there's nothing wrong with it. Where's it going to end up? Most people end up with the TV taking over, or the innocent videos taking over much of their lives. I had a very sad story just recently. I met a friend of mine who I always admired his education and his home. And we sat for dinner together, and every 5-10 minutes, they brought up examples from movies. Now, I never discussed movies with them. It was never like part of what we discussed at the table. And we finished the meal, and I didn't want to ask him. I didn't want to put him on the spot. But I had to wonder to myself, what happened here? Last time we were together was a year ago. We never discussed movies. Now he's sitting at the table, and he's starting to tell me, you have to see this movie I saw, and you have to see that movie. And it blew my mind. Like, how fast did that switch? So my wife pointed out to me after the meal that he had been hospitalized for like 2 months straight. So it could be that he spent those 2 months watching movies. You know, he couldn't do anything. So maybe that's why it's such a big part of his life. I don't know. But I'm just saying, people very often say what you're saying, and then they don't realize that they're opening a watershed. Yeah.
We covered the thing with television, but television isn't just in the television. As in, on the computer, you could get every TV show and every movie.
Agreed.
More.
Agreed.
But the difference is, like, you have a computer and you use it for work. It's a tool that you use that's very useful. So how would you recommend to go about that?
I'll tell you, but you'll think it's extreme. Let's begin differently. I'll ask you a question. What percentage of high school students do you think have seen pornography? From high schools. I'm not talking about secular high schools, Orthodox high schools. What percentage do you think?
90. I'm going to go with the 90.
So the statistic is that 90% admit, and the 90% say that the 10% are liars. They're also watching. So I was on a bus 2 years ago that was running through an ultra-Orthodox neighborhood. And a group of girls come on the bus, and they're all dressed in the same ultra-Orthodox uniform. I'm basically the only guy on the bus. I'm surrounded by whatever color their uniform is. I don't want to give it away because it was an unusual uniform of a very specific sect. And girls, if I'd say blue, that would be fine. It wasn't blue. And I would say about seven girls sit in the seat in front of me. So it's a two-seater, but there's like this pile of girls in front of me. Okay? And I couldn't figure out what was going on. You know, I'm trying to be modest, sitting in my own seat. And all over me there are girls. So I couldn't figure out what was going on, so I got up to walk away. I figured that this must be a very popular seat where I'm at. And as I get up, I look down and there's this one girl who has a camera. And they're watching a video of this dancer making all kinds, this guy making all kinds of moves. And all these girls with all their ultra-Orthodox dresses and everything are all oohing and eyeing over this. I don't even know if it was just Jewish and secular or not even Jewish singer. Making all kinds of nuts and nua moves. And I walked away from that seat and I said to myself, we're goners. That's it. It's all over. Game over. If this is what's going on, the girls just walked out of that school. And these are girls who might be shaving their heads when they get married. And this is what they're doing on the bus. I'm finished. Kamarnu. One girl comes on with her camera and they're all watching. Okay, so where are we holding today? I'm saying, you're asking me a question. I want us to understand the magnitude of the issue we're dealing with here. You're talking about wherever you're going to send your kid, they're going to be exposed. You're not going to overcome it. You know, I brought up my kids, sending them to a very Orthodox school that doesn't allow iPhones or anything of the nature. And my son was, I don't know if he was 6 or 7, the eldest. And we never discussed iPhone at home. Now, you have to figure this was 3 years ago, 4 years ago. iPhones were not yet that big of an in thing. And he comes home and says, Abba, do you have an iPhone? And I said, what's an iPhone? Now, I knew what an iPhone was, but you know, I'm trying to understand, where did he get this from? And he goes, that's the phone where you could do this, and the picture goes bigger, this, and the picture goes smaller, this, and you switch pictures. And I said, where'd you get that from? You know, I'm sending him to this school where they don't have secular studies, barely, and it's an ultra-Orthodox community and everything. And he looks at me and says, Abba, come on, everyone knows, you know. Okay. So I'm just saying, here's where we are today. The challenge is all around us. Now the question is, what are you going to put in your home? So I think you have to be realistic and play a very difficult balancing act where if you're going to bring internet into the house, you have to be realistic. I, as a little kid, I wasn't bar mitzvah yet. I knew how to get around everything. The blocked modems, the blocked TVs, the cable. We'd go to hotels. Hotels have this system where pay-per-view, right? Anything you want to watch, you have to pay. I'm telling you, this little schnook at 7 years old knew how to circumvent it and see everything that was in the hotel without paying a dime. I'm not saying it was mutter. I'm telling you what I knew how to do. Okay? I knew how to get around every system, and I was nothing. And I'm not that technically inclined. But kids know how to do this. You figure it out. I'm not going to say online, because I don't know if kids are watching. But I can tell you right now, 2 or 3 ways that you can easily get around any system. All these blocking systems and everything, all the filters, everything. Your kids are going to be able to get around it. So now the question is, okay, what do? You want your children to have the skills of using a computer. on the other hand, you don't want them out there alone. There are predators and there's all kinds of dangerous things out there. So I think it depends on the society you live in and the school you send to. If you send to a school and you live in a society where it's possible to delay the exposure, so you benefit. I have the good fortune that I can allow my kids to use the computer in a very controlled environment. They write letters on the computer. We look certain things up. They ask questions, and we'll look up scientific questions, and we'll use it like an encyclopedia. We can write emails on the computer. And they basically, what they really like using the computer for is Torah software. They like being able to click on any name and seeing all the information about the person, and that's their fun right now. Now, how long can I extend that for? Not too much longer. Meaning, I assume until age 12 or 13, and that's it. Then I have to start dealing with the next stage. So the kid's going to hit an age where he's going to say, look, I want to send emails. I want to do other things. But I'm lucky that we're in an environment where I can allow myself to do that. If a person is in a different environment, so then the kids are going to want to use the computer at an earlier age, you got to figure out how to balance it, how to show them the good things about the computer. Computer usage should be limited. If you give them open access to the computer, there's no end. I'll tell you a scary story. We had a babysitter. So Orthodox, I didn't know if they'd allow her to come babysit in our home. I wasn't sure we were kosher enough for her. So I have a policy from the time the kids were five. I told my wife, kids get smarter than us sooner than we know it. So from the time they were 5 years old, I put a password on every computer in the house. There's no computer in our house that can be turned on and used. Every single computer, you must have the password or you can't turn it on. Okay, so that's step one. And I'm telling you, I did this when the kids were five because I told my wife, we're not going to notice when they're smart enough to get up in the middle of the night and use the computer while we're sleeping. I did it, okay? When I was a kid already, I was doing things middle of the night. My parents didn't know. And I would make up with my friends, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, we would get up, sneak out of our houses, and go bike riding all around because the streets were empty. We'd go flying down the streets. I'm telling you, between 1 and 4 a.m., I was on the streets. My parents, till today, they don't know. I never told them.
Well, they're
like to. I'm telling you, at 1 a.m., I had free access to anything I wanted. And my parents thought they had control. They had no idea what I was doing. I'm telling you, till today, they don't know. And my friends, the same thing. We were all, I'm telling you, we were biking the streets in the middle of the night. Cops would sometimes stop us. It's not illegal, you know what we do. So I'm just saying, I know what a kid can do at 1 o'clock in the morning when parents are sleeping. So we have this babysitter. Seems like very pious. Everything's beautiful. We come home, and she leaves. And I tell my wife, did you turn on the computer? And she says, no. I said, you know the computer's been on. She said, how could you tell? It's off. I said, because the antivirus is on. So that means that she tried to do something because the antivirus is telling us that some virus tried attacking our computer. I think the virus won. I think she basically destroyed our computer that time. But she turned on the computer, connected her MP3 player, and she was going to do something with our computer. She made a mistake that she connected her MP3 player before the computer booted. So what happened was the antivirus kicked in, And she couldn't get beyond the password, so she couldn't turn it on. But when I turned on the computer, I had a warning sign from the antivirus. You have a virus that's trying to demolish your computer. Again, innocent, everything's beautiful, everything's clean, but her parents have no clue what she's up to. So you have to realize that as parents, you're not going to have full control. You have to work with the kids, A, to try to limit their exposure to things that are detrimental. If your kids want a Facebook account, it should be a mutual Facebook account. You have to decide. I wouldn't let a kid have a Facebook account at this age. But again, if you're in a community where all his classmates have a Facebook account, it's a very tough call. But if you both have the password and you monitor what's going on there, okay? Remember, kids are murdered every year through Facebook. I mean, kids, we had in Kochav Yaakov a girl that disappeared on her parents. She made a friend in Facebook and One morning they wake up, she's not there. They tracked her down, but these things are happening all over the world. Where kids, predators hunt these kids, and the kids think there is a friend their age. They don't even realize it could be a pedophile who's 40 or 50 years old. And now the last thing the pedophile can do is release the kid afterwards. Half these kids on cartons are gone. Meaning when these people get these kids, they're not letting them go afterwards. They can't let them out alive. That's a very big threat to this person. So all these stories about children that were held for years, unfortunately we have no idea what else is going on. But the logic dictates, this I heard from an FBI, there's an FBI agent who put a class on this online on 613.org, explaining to parents the dangers of what's going on the internet. So there's a religious danger and there's a practical danger. And as a parent, you have to figure out how to balance that. And a lot of it is going to be defined by the society you're in. And you have to work with the system. If you're in a shul where all the kids are online, if they're in a school where all the kids are online, you got to work with them. I think you may not let a kid have a computer in his own bedroom. There has to be a computer for the family and a central place where everyone sees what's going on. I think the computer has to be turned off with a lock at night, where you can't access it without it. I think you should have a filter and realize that without you being there, the filter isn't worth that much. Once we get offline, I'll tell you a few tricks on how to get around the filter. So there are simple tricks that are very easy that any kid can do. So that's why you can't assume the filter is doing your job as a parent. I would say that kids should only have set access to the internet when the parent is around and sees what's going on. So the computer could be right near the kitchen if the mom's in the kitchen, or somewhere else where you see what's going on. Don't rely on the filter alone. And again, I think it's a good thing to delay access to the computer, and like everything else, expose them to what's good. There's so much good on the internet and on the computer. Help your child discover what's right. Believe me, unfortunately, they will very easily discover what's wrong. Being that you're going to expose them, try exposing them through the positive. I think that's a correct approach. I think it's also important to discuss with them that there are challenges in life, and that we all have a Yetzer Hara, and that a person has to control it. And there are things you shouldn't start because it's hard to stop, and every time you do it, it's wrong. I think there's an age where you actually have to address the problem. They're going to encounter it. They have friends, and even if they don't mean to, it pops up at them. I'll just tell you one scary story. I thought I had a virus on the computer, right? Rebooted the whole computer, reinstalled Windows. This was back in the age when you could do that, right? Windows XP. So I reinstalled Windows XP, formatted the whole hard drive, reinstalled Windows, reinstalled Office. And I didn't realize that when I reinstalled Office, I set Instant Messenger to be on. Okay, I didn't know what Instant Messenger was, but somehow I installed it. So I'm finishing to reinstall everything I reinstalled, and suddenly Instant Messenger pops up. You have a friend request. So I didn't know what I was looking at. It's like, weird. I didn't even know what Instant Messenger was. So I look at it, and there's a link. And this person offers me to be a friend. Now, I just rebooted the whole hard drive. How'd they find me? You're talking about 2 hours that the computer was reformatted. And already I have a link to a porn site. And that's when I didn't do anything. I didn't ask anyone for anything. Reformatted the whole computer. How'd it get to me? It taught me something about what our children are really facing when they go online. They don't have to look for trouble. Trouble's already looking for them. Yeah?
I have a question.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Whoever wants to go, we finished 15 minutes ago. This is a facade. This is a figment of your imagination. Yes?
So you mentioned, it's kind of hard to explain I see a small problem in the logic, so I'll try to explain it. It might sound a bit odd, but I'll try to explain. So the thing you mentioned is the TV can be like poison, right? And in many ways it is. But the thing is if you, this is the odd part, if you take small amounts of poison over time, you become immune to it. It desensitizes you, literally, and you become stronger towards it. And the thing is, what I don't get is, like I asked my rabbi once, what about shorts? Can I wear shorts? He says, no. Orthodox people don't wear shorts. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't really put you on the spot. No, and the thing is, you know, I said, why? He's like, well, the women, though, you'll arouse them. And
who said this?
It's in Vancouver, Washington. I can tell you his name later. But no, but the thing is, and I wore shorts anyway. I was, because I didn't agree with him. I thought his logic was a little off. And here's the thing: it's like, if someone is so like, and I've heard it from the men's side too. Like I've heard, I was with a friend, and he starts complaining about these girls, not Jewish, walking down Jerusalem. He said, "Look at what we have to look at here, and these girls in tight pants and short skirts, and like." He's obviously extremely sensitive towards this stuff. And I'm just thinking, like, you have to learn to not look. You have to learn to not be, oh my God, I'm aroused. Her pants are too tight, and you're aroused, and that's it. And, you know, it's like, you have to be able to control yourself a little bit. And it's the same thing with violence. The first time you're in a fight, you're just scared, and you get your butt kicked. And the next time, you're all right. You realize you're in a fight, you're not in shock, you can fight back, and you can control yourself. The same thing, you watch a violent movie the first time, and oh my God, that was intense, you know, and then it's over, it passes, you know. On one hand, it's not bad. It's not completely bad, there's still some good in it. I mean, I'm not saying like going out and watching horror movies, or sitting and watching porn for hours just so you can pretend to avoid girls, which, if anything, would make you chase after them more. But I'm saying, like, if you're online and, like, the girls watching the guy dance on the bus, I don't see really, like, the problem with that. Like, okay, the guy's dancing. There's lots of good dancers, you know. My roommate was dancing yesterday. I was playing some music. You know, it's like, fine, he's not a woman, I understand. But still, like, there has to be a certain level of desensitization, where automatically your mind doesn't turn towards what's wrong. You have to be able to see, okay, you know, he's dancing or she's dancing. I can see the dance is beautiful. You have to learn to like look past the sexual aspect yourself. It's kind of like inside you, no? It just seems like
I think we're confusing two things. I agree with part of what you're saying. I think that you're joining two things together, which is not fair to join. There is an element of normalcy that has to be there. You can't bring up a society where guys have zero interaction with girls and then they're, like you're saying, they're sensitized to a point which is not normal. I agree.
Yeah.
Meaning a person has to have sisters and a person has to be at Tzmachot where he knows what it's like to say good Shabbos to a cousin, and there's a certain amount of interaction that's within a realm of modesty that has to be there. And people sometimes take it way too far. And then they pay the price. But to go from there to the point of, let's take seeing violent things. I don't think we should be desensitized to violence. I think it's very good we should be sensitive to violence.
Of course,
I'm just taking an example you gave. Okay, so I think that example shows something.
Imagine you see two people fighting, you're just in shock. You've never seen anybody get hit before. You don't even know what to do. I can't imagine what that would be like, never to see violence, and then all of a sudden two people are fighting. I wouldn't even know how to stop them. I wouldn't even know to see who's the violent guy, who's the aggressor, who's the victim. You wouldn't even know where. There's things to look for. You have to be able to know how to stop the fight. I mean, maybe fine. I guess that's actually really, maybe that's a bad example of why.
Okay.
It was towards like the whole internet, like censoring our kids from this stuff. Like, I don't know.
Again, I think there's so much improper things that if you don't keep an eye on what's going on, you're exposing them to things that are hurtful to them from a secular perspective, not even from a religious perspective. I think the fact that so many kids are watching pornography is showing itself in their relationships. There are plenty of people that can't get married and commit to one woman. I met a friend of mine. We studied together 15, 16 years ago. He's still single. That puts him at 35, 36. And he's still single, and I tried setting him up, and I said to him, do you have an understanding of why you're still single? I hadn't seen him for a decade, but we got you know, we hit it off again real fast. And then I said to him, you know, maybe I could help you, maybe I could set you up. Can you give me a little bit of guidance? And he said to me, I'm still single because I'm online too much. And seeing all these movies and seeing everything else I'm seeing, I have a very hard time settling down and saying this woman's good enough for me. It's not going to happen so long as I'm where I am.
Let's skip the whole, the sexual aspect and all of that. Let's go to what you said about Facebook. Like, if your child wants to have a Facebook account at a certain age, it should be a joint account. Personally, I had really strict parents. My parents were really strict. They were especially my dad. He was overboard, very much controlling everything. And because of that, I never opened up to him, never spoke to him, never had any relationship with him. Always lying to him, getting around, because he would never ever.
I guess it depends on the age. But, to put your kid at age 13, 14, 15 in a room with predators is criminal. To put your kid on Facebook without knowing who he's in touch with and what he's doing is the equivalent.
Well, you can explain it. If it's at that age where he can go online and be on Facebook, if all his friends are on Facebook, you can explain to him what predators are, what they do. Open up a documentary. Look, this girl, she was in prison in his basement for 3 years. You could scare the living crap out of him with literally the truth. And he will never, ever go and meet anyone who he doesn't know on Facebook.
Let's pick up on that next week.
Right. It's just that my parents...
You guys are not so far apart. You're talking about, you're saying to focus in this world... You have to take a beating to know it's not so bad, so you can fight now and then. You have to expose your kids if you think every other kid is going to be talking about this. But Robin's also saying this loss of innocence and this coarsening of people is also tragic. And the question is, at what age do you do it? How do you do it? What community does it require? Early, toughening up. What community later? And you can hear it. I mean, you both. Looking to protect your kids and hopefully building the kind of society that we all yearn for. But we also have to deal with the world. Where do you put the bar?
I learned to resent my father.
I understand.
Everyone else had all these freedoms. Imagine your friend.
So that's because all your friends were there with that freedom. That's true.
You're talking about your kids, and they're going to yeshiva, ultra-Orthodox, and they also have this freedom. They all knew what an iPhone was, and they're
right, but their friends are not on Facebook, so I don't have that issue. Their friends are not online.
In
3 years, I'll have to see where their society is holding, where their friends are, and then I'll have to see how I can give them close to that amount of freedom without endangering them. It's a very tough call. If it were up to me, I wouldn't give them internet till they were 18. If it were up to me, when they're old enough to take responsibility for their own actions, and I don't have to worry about it, and I don't have to think about it, and it's their Yetzirah and their deal, and leave me alone, I don't want to know from it. You didn't deal, that's your job. Fine, I think approximately at age 18, when a guy is ready to get married, he should also be ready to control himself with the internet. Not 18 from a legal perspective. I'm saying you're old enough to deal with the idea of women in your life. Fine, your business. I don't feel like I have a responsibility towards him. But I can't do that. Unfortunately, I can't keep him out of this world till he's 18. There's a world, he has to deal with it. If his friends are there, if he's given homework to do online and all that, okay. But I can't ignore the dangers I'm exposing him to. Let me give you an example. If you had to send your kid to a store to buy himself a magazine for homework, and 75% of the magazines on the shelf were pornography.
Right.
25% were the magazines he needed. What would you do? Would you give him the money and tell him to go to the store alone?
I would give him the money. I would tell him, you better bring me the receipt.
Right, but he'll stand there leafing through the other magazines.
Huh?
He'll stand leafing through the other magazines.
The bag ones have a plastic bag around them.
No, they don't.
I guess you could get something in between with the bikinis and whatever. No, you're right. I mean, I don't have kids. I don't understand.
I'm saying, but that's what the internet is.
Well, here's the reason. The rationalizing and saying it's not so bad, and the other kids in school talk about it. That's the society.
Here's the other thing.